Hello, welcome everybody. Today we have Lucas Root. We had such a great pre-meeting before the actual recording that I couldn't find a good spot to stop and start. So it's kind of, we're just going to jump right into it. Lucas is just going to tell us about himself, Wall Street, how he just so happens to work for the Pokemon company and he gets paid to play video games. I honestly, that's a pretty killer deal on it. But, yeah, other than that, really inspiring. I kind of took this as a selfish route and just picked his brain on different tactics I want to do. So I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot of value for you guys. Tell me what you all think about it. Any critiques, comments, etc., etc. Instagram, Josh Bolton Show. Twitter, Josh Bolton Show. You want to email me, joshboltonshow@gmail.com. This is same old, same old. I try to make it as simple as possible for you guys. All right. Have a good one and let's go.
Welcome to the Josh Bolton Show, where we dive into interesting and inspiring conversations. And now, your host, Josh Bolton.
So, tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I run a couple of different businesses. One of them is a consulting business. My largest and longest standing client is the Pokemon company.
Oh, that's so cool.
It is very cool. I love working with them. I do business strategy. So they make a whole bunch of money and then I help them figure out how to spend it.
You get paid to tell them how to pay their money. That's awesome.
It's a bit of a joke for me and it's kind of true. They brought me on because they knew they were going to make a whole bunch of money in, the Pokemon Go release, mm-hmm. 5.5 years ago now.
Oh, it's been that long.
It's been a while, right? And they wanted to reinvest the money in growing their business. But the Pokemon company is amazing. They really stay super deeply focused in the things that they think they do well. And then everything else, 100% of everything else, even if it's stuff that they need to support their business, they just outsource it all. And that's the sort of thing I help them do. I help them outsource so that they can stay focused. I help them build additional business lines, new ways to approach and attract the market, all from an external perspective. And then as they get comfortable with it and they decide it's time to bring it internal, that's what they do. We transition it from an external to an internal.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, how did you contact them or they contact you for working together?
It's kind of a funny story. Okay. I was on Wall Street for 17 years doing mergers and acquisitions. I was on the back end of those. So no, I was not the guy getting paid $50 million, unfortunately.
Oh, bummer.
I was on the back end of those putting together the companies that needed to be merged or in the other direction, when a company was sort of being taken apart by a divestiture, right? Mm-hmm. The other side of a merger. I was the one that was figuring out how to pull them apart so that both new halves could operate independently. So I was the strategist that made these things work. And after doing that for a while, I thought I knew a thing or two. So I decided it was time to launch my consulting company, sort of hang up my tile and see if people wanted to give me a call. And I was lucky that just at that time, so I didn't know about Pokemon Go, right? Most people knew very little about it. They kept it pretty hard under wraps until they launched it. Mm-hmm. But they expected they were going to do really well. So they put out a call to all of their executives. And I happened to be a friend of one of those executives from conferences. You know, he was into operations, I do operation strategy, so we got to know each other from conferences and stuff. And when they put that call out, he called me up and said, hey, this is the sort of thing you'd be good at. Are you interested in coming in and having a chat? And it was right after I decided to start doing consulting, so obviously.
Wow, the stars aligned perfectly on that one.
It really did. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to say that's your predominant client now, right? On top of whatever side stuff you do.
So I have 14 clients. They're one of them.
Okay.
They probably account for 50% of my work at this point. Okay. Yeah. I also own a couple of other businesses. I do some coaching. One of my businesses is a fractional CFO business. So for finance.
Interesting. I've been hearing a lot of the fractional C-suite stuff, like fractional.
It's great.
Okay. I'm going to say,
a lot of businesses don't actually need a full-time C-suite for things like COO or CFO. So for example, a technology company probably doesn't need a full-time COO, chief operating officer, until they're doing 30, 40, 50 plus million dollars in revenue.
Right.
It's just a waste of money for them, but they really do need somebody who's capable of that role to make the strategic decisions and make sure that the business is moving forward in a way that's, strong, growth, sustainable, focused, they don't set themselves up for mistakes later on. Right. So you'll hire a fractional COO. This is great for technology companies. You'll hire a fractional COO who makes crazy good money by the hour, but you only buy 10 hours a month or so from them.
Interesting.
And you pay them like $500 an hour or something like that because you're only buying 10 hours a month. And that way you make sure that you're not setting yourself up for some real pain in the future because you've got this person making sure that you're good.
That's interesting.
It's actually a really good business model for everyone. It's a true win-win.
Because I listened to like a marketing podcast today in digital marketing. And that's one of his new sponsors is like a fractional CMO. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there going, how do you just like parcel out little here, little there? I'm like, I'm used to the old structure. You have a CEO, CMO, CFO. Like you have one. Like, how do you parcel that out and like make it work? Sounds like you could easily explain that to me.
Yeah. So CMO is another great one. So think about like really heavily operation oriented businesses, like maybe a moving company.
Okay.
They probably don't need to spend a lot of time every month thinking about their marketing. Whatever they're doing, they need to plan a little bit for next season. Like, hey, winter's coming. Do you need to get your skis out of storage? Right. But for the most part, they probably don't need a lot of marketing expertise. So they'll work with a fractional CMO, somebody they hire for like three, four hours a month, or maybe 10 hours a month. Again, you pay that person really well for their time. But you just don't need a lot of time from that person because your business is so simple and so repeatable month after month. It looks so much the same. Probably the clients that you're working with, you've got a really established pipeline. You're probably not growing your pipeline really quickly. You don't want to. You're an operations business. If you grow too quickly, then you get more business than you can handle, right?
And then it looks back because customers are like, what are we supposed to do with this guy? He's like booked out for like 3 years kind of thing.
Exactly. So a fractional CMO would be actually a really good choice for, let's say, a million plus to less than 10 million. Operations focused like a moving company.
That's interesting. So then let's just say I want to take a swack at this. What is your site that I would sign up and be like, I want to be a chief operating officer. And I think I'm very good at logistics and strategy. What would be some of the steps I would need to do?
You need to market yourself.
Well, yeah.
If you're good and you can get some people to give some testimonials, if you're good, once you start marketing, it's going to be simple, not easy, okay, but simple.
Well, yeah. Usually if it's easy, it's going to be hard kind of thing. If it's simple, it's going to be long, but doable, mm-hmm, something like that. I might've butchered the whole thing.
I get what you're saying.
Okay. The other's probably sitting there going like, what the hell is Josh going on about?
I get what you're saying.
Thank you. Wow, there's so many things to unpack. Do you want me to cut all that out or do you want to keep going?
up to you.
I kind of like it. It's going to lead up to a lot. Then how about you just introduce yourself properly, Lucas, and we'll get going from there.
We're going to have some fun with the editing, right?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Josh, I'm really grateful you had me here on your show. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute honor and a pleasure. Just talking to you earlier, it was just already eye-opening. We're in for a lot today.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun conversation. A little bit about me. I was on Wall Street for 17 years doing mergers and acquisitions. I was the guy in the back who would put the companies together on the back end of a merger. It was great. I got to work with some of the smartest people in the world, like crazy smart, hardworking, really successful. I got to learn everything they knew. After 17 years of that, I decided it was time to launch my consulting business and bring that knowledge to, a lot of different companies, one of whom, the Pokemon company, I display right here over my shoulder.
You have some awesome pictures, honestly.
Thank you. I enjoy them. In addition, Pokemon Company allows me to do some really amazing things like mentoring startup businesses that just can't afford to hire a consultant like me. So I work with startup businesses, and I've been doing that for the past 3 years. It's been an amazing ride, and I really enjoy it. When the pandemic hit, COVID, when everything changed, when the whole world turned upside down, the Pokemon Company called me up and they said, "Hey, listen, you do all your work from home," which is true. They're in Seattle, I'm in San Diego. Could you give a presentation to the whole company on how you do your work from home and how you maintain your productivity and effectiveness? I said, yeah, sure. I can do that. It turns out, being on Wall Street, working under crazy intense deadlines, and launching my own consulting company and working with the Pokemon Company, it turns out that I've actually become very good at working from home, something that I've built up a really strong skill set around. I didn't even know that until they called me up and said, "Hey, you want to help us out a little?" Of course, they're already a client, so I'm not going to say no.
That would just be rude.
That would just be rude. And so for the past year and a half, I've been, I built a course. It's available online on my website. I've written several articles, and I've been talking to people on podcasts to help people get better at working from home.
That's awesome. I want to say, yeah, where we are now, I would assume most would understand how working from home is, but you never know. There's that second wave. People are now probably going to have to go home that didn't before, kind of thing.
Yeah. And people who had full-time jobs and either maintained them through the pandemic and decided they didn't love that work anymore.
Yeah.
What I like to say to my wife is people are changing their playing field. They're switching from this one to that one. A lot of people are going, you know what, this whole full-time work thing is, it's just not working for me. I need to find another path.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing is the gig market is exploding. People are much more interested in taking gig work where, you know, they'll work on one project for 10 hours or 50 hours or something like that. And they'll sell their time instead of just one single employer. They sell their time in bulk to various different buyers.
Which also, like we were mentioning earlier before the record button, was the fractional CMO, COO, CFO.
Yep.
I'm going to say, but you can't really fractionalize out a CEO, right?
Actually, I think you could.
Really? Oh my gosh. That would be interesting right there.
Yeah. I could think of a couple of different business models where a fractional CEO would be a good fit. I was considered as a fractional CEO for a technology startup about a year ago. And I think it could have worked.
Interesting. So the technology platform itself, like a SaaS or something, that would be the best for the fractional system?
For a fractional CEO, yes. It really depends on the business. The question you have to ask yourself is, does the business benefit from full-time engagement in that, you know, in that function. So,
okay,
you know, a technology company that's relatively early, maybe the founder wants to be CTO, not CEO, right? So the founder really wants to like stay focused on the technology stuff and doesn't want to be the person making the decisions. They're still the visionary. So they're gonna drive the vision, but they just don't want to be the one that executes that vision every step of the way. That would be a great CEO fractional scenario.
Yeah, because you have the original founder and visionary on the team. You just, a smart CEO would just call them up and be like, okay, you started this, you want me to run it, but what am I supposed to do, kind of thing. And they can figure it out.
Another neat example of that might be like an alcohol brand startup, like, you know, a new brandy or a new tequila that's like super focused on one specific idea. Maybe it's well, or maybe it's a really high end something. Like a fractional CEO would be a really good example of how to use a fractional system. Because an alcohol brand is like 100% focused on marketing, right? So you'd need your CMO to be full time. As quickly as possible, as soon as you can afford it. So you've got the visionary and you've got the CMO, but a CEO, you really don't need a lot of executive time in order to keep the business moving forward smoothly, maybe 5 hours a week or 5 hours a month even.
Yeah. Let's see, this is where I'm making assumptions based off previous conversations I've had. Like I talked to this one lady, her son started up her own cold brew coffee. Actually, he's in California. It's called Bomani. Mm-hmm. I was knocked over my printer on that. And that's where she was talking, like, he, similar path to Gio, he was a Wall Street back agent, like crazy hours, unrealistic deadline, somehow pulled it off for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's where she said, like, he started doing it, but he's really good at research and marketing, and his partner's good at logistics. But I'm like, I never said, I'm like, but where's the executive in all this? Who's actually making the decision to pull it? They might be doing something similar.
Yeah. It sounds like a great example of a fractional CEO scenario. And maybe that's not the way they're doing it, but I think that would be a good one.
Yeah. I'm totally just basing it off assumptions and collecting and talking with other people. I'm like, maybe it's just fractional, or maybe they just, the original son that worth the unrealistic hours. It's just like, oh, okay, time to do some big guy stuff, kind of thing.
They put on a different set of pants.
Mm-hmm. The really big boy pants.
That's right.
So tell me your process for helping mentoring the startup companies. What's the process, and also what are you teaching them?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the same skills that I bring to my consulting clients, I'm bringing those to my advisory clients, but I'm just doing it with much lower level of engagement. So they'll come to me with a problem. I'll tell them how to approach that solution and how I might actually solve that problem myself, right? So for example, one of my clients recently came to me and said, I've got an employee who's stealing from me.
Oof.
Look, it happens.
Yeah, it does. It
happens in every single business. It has happened in my own businesses.
Yeah.
So I said, this one's pretty simple. Now, this particular client, this was somebody who does not like to be the bad guy, doesn't like to have hard conversations, doesn't like to you know, fire people. I was like, this is simple. You have to fire him. The employee was male. You have to fire him.
Yeah, because if you don't set a demonstration of you will not stand for this, and the others are going to do it too.
That's right. That's 100% correct. Gary V, a polarizing name out there, but he is. But he's right when he says corporate culture, the culture that you build inside your business, is the number one most important thing that you can do. And you can either build a culture that looks to take advantage of you, or you can build a culture that looks to be collaborative and build the business with you. One or the other, they don't coexist. You can't have both.
Yeah.
And if somebody's stealing, number one, you got to get rid of them. 100%. There's no other way. But number two, you need to spend some time thinking about how you built a culture that made them think it was a good idea to steal from you. And that's a really hard conversation to have with yourself.
It is. That's one big thing I've learned as I've talked to all the different people through the show is a lot of them actually even told me, like, we don't like firing people. They're literally, their income is relying on me. Like, but all at the same time. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it kind of, I think it was one of them. I said, I quoted Art of War. I'm like, if you, to truly show you love your soldiers, you must discipline them and then love them afterwards, kind of thing, or something like that. And that's where the guy's like, yeah, I had to learn that after like three people, where it's like, if they don't learn, it's like, whatever at this point. So what happened for you that you said someone stole from you?
Years ago, one of the first businesses that I started was a real estate investment business, where I actually identified an area in one of the cities that I was in that had an amazing cash flow opportunity, really low cost housing. I could go in and buy the houses, upgrade them so that they were, you know, top quality units for the area, and then put in Section 8 renters. So, you know, one of the biggest issues that landlords have is dealing with renters, but Section 8 are amazing people. If you put together like a really nice upgraded apartment that's high quality, they're going to love you. And they're going to do everything they can to number one, stay in your apartment. And number two, make sure that Section 8, the state pays either all or most of their rent. They're going to do everything they can to make sure that the state pays you. So it's actually a really awesome win-win scenario if you've got good Section 8. You know, upgrade your units, make sure that it's top quality for the area. Your renters are going to love you. It's amazing. So I did that. I bought a whole bunch of units. I rented them out to Section 8. My property manager was stealing from me. I knew it. I didn't mind. The cash flow business was so strong that it just wasn't it wasn't impacting my profitability enough for me to discipline him. The problem is, and it's exactly what we're talking about right now, because he got away with it, it escalated. So I learned that lesson a very hard way.
What was it? At first, was it like 2-3% of whatever you made? He just kind of took off the top and never said.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it started small. He was stealing. I had coin-op laundry. So he'd just take all of the coins and just say people aren't using the laundry. I knew they were. Like, come on. How stupid do you think I am?
That's so, yeah. Oh my God. That's so infuriating. Like, just frustrating.
Yep. And then he started getting the renters to pay some portion of their rent in cash so that I, you know, the state portion, it was never in cash. It didn't come through the renters. It was direct deposit. So that never, he couldn't touch that, but he'd get the renters to pay some portion of their rent in cash. That I didn't know until they started moving out, because he was hustling them to raise their cash rent. And I was like, why am I losing good renters? Like, this is, you know, I call them up. I don't know. They found somewhere else. I know that I'm giving good units and most or all of their rent is covered by the state. Why would they find somewhere else to be? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. If the property manager is hustling them, they're going to be like, I don't want this.
Yeah. That's exactly what was happening.
Wow.
So yeah, I ended up having to fire him, and that was not that I lost a lot of money because of the fact that I didn't know that that's what he was doing, and I was losing renters.
So now, looking back with hindsight, let's say someone is looking to get the real estate gig going, the coin op, what would be some advice you say looking into a property manager like that?
Number one, hire somebody who has a number of clients. I tried to get him to be my, like, I was his only client. He's external. He got paid on commission. I tried to get it to the point where I was his only client. I think that was a mistake. Hire somebody who has a number of clients. It's true that they'll split their attention. It is true. And that's a risk that you have to manage. But I think it's better because you have some other people that you can talk to about what's going on in their businesses. You know, considerate references, or, you know, touching base with someone to make sure that what you're seeing is unique to you or is not unique to you. And then you can address it with him.
Okay. Yeah. That's when, I actually looked into getting the real estate biz. I still do not have enough capital for that, but, That's one of them. A lot of people have mentioned, like, kind of indirectly. I like how you approached it. Is like the find someone that has a good list but can add you in, kind mm-hmm. of thing. Because they're like they're too damn busy to even consider like messing with you.
Yeah. And then also don't be hands off. I was trying to be hands off, and I think that was a mistake. I think I would have noticed what was going on sooner if I had not been hands off.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. What is like, you have to at least keep you monitor the pulse. You may not be looking at it, but you just got to be like checking in every so often.
Yeah. Do exit interviews with your renters when they're leaving, find out what's going on, find out what you need to improve. I was trying to give them a top quality for the price. I was trying to give them a top quality life, you know, upgraded units, top of the class in the area. And I should have been trying to maintain a touch on that.
Yeah. This is the thing with hindsight though. You're like, oh man, I should have done that. And you're like, well, it's too late now. Do it in the future.
I've learned I will do it better in the future.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So.
And that lesson is broadly applicable, right?
Yeah. That's
in every business, maintain the pulse. In every business, pay attention to the things that are affecting your revenue positively or negatively.
Right.
In every business, if someone's stealing, they got to go.
They gotta, yeah. Wow. That's a bummer. One of my, I do martial arts, over in like the Upland area of California. And, one of the guys I train with, he's a multimillionaire in Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. And I asked him like, hey, like, what do you do for income? And he's like, oh, I do this, this, and this. And then he saw the spark of entrepreneurship in me. So we started talking for a couple of serious weeks. But essentially, I noticed he was getting really frustrated, and he was like, he's an older dude, but he's hitting like a freaking, like a, an animal.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like 80-year-old, he shouldn't be hitting this hard. He might throw out his shoulder kind of thing. And that's where I asked him like, hey, what's up? Like you're angrier than usual. He's like, oh, I know my own children are stealing from me, from my business. I'm like, okay, you know this and you're letting it happen. He's like, well, the only thing I have left is to press charges on them. I'm like, how much have they stolen? Because that might just answer the question right there. He's like, about 5 to 10 million. I'm like, press charges. That's so easy. I'm like, I'm sorry, but it's like, if it was under 100K, it's like, it sucks for your line of business. You can make it back. That's going to be hard to make back.
That's a really tough call because it's family. But
well, and that's what he said. He's like,
but I agree. I would press charges. I would press charges for their good.
And that's what I told them. They're like, it's not for you. I said, yes, it helps the bank out and you get all the money, but it also teaches them a lesson. They shouldn't do that in life. You are the father. This could be your final, like, I'm sorry, I'm sending you here, but you got to learn.
Yep.
So from what I figured out, they went to like arbitration, the side court, and essentially they just settled it, and he gets whatever monthly payments, and the cat, he can't skip. Even if he files BK, he can't skip to his payments kind of thing. So he'll get his money eventually. He's like, it was a hot mess. I haven't seen him recently, but I'm like, I wonder how he's doing.
That's tough. That's a really tough situation.
Yeah.
Mine was much easier. It's just an employee, no family, yeah. Not a friend.
Well, honestly, for you, it's also, was it more of a freelancer too, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, no harm, no foul. Just cut them off right there.
Yep. I could have, and I should have. I let it go too long, and I paid the price.
Hmm. I think, yeah. Well, like we were saying earlier, eventually all businesses sadly do go through it. And it's the choice to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just still really curious about the Pokemon Company. You mentioned more to me earlier. Would it? Else do you help you tell them how to strategize and like put your their money here? How do you find these people to outsource kind of thing?
Ultimately that's a big portion of the value that I bring to the companies that I work with is, you know, I have an enormously broad network of people that I have worked with in the past through Wall Street or coordinated vendor businesses to the businesses I worked with on, you know, back then.
Right.
You know, I do the research and I do the outreach, and I'm pretty good at building relationships, right? So yeah, that's what I do.
That's awesome. I was like me over here is thinking like, does he know who the card printer is, kind of thing?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. Is it America or in Japan?
I can't tell you that.
Okay, that's the NDA area. Got it.
Yes.
I figured you had an NDA like right out of the gate when you were explaining that. I'm like, ooh, this is a treading smart area.
Yep. But you can ask. It's not a problem that you ask. I'll just tell you. I can't tell you that.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's what I'm like, where do I go from here now?
Yeah.
Then I'm curious. This is more just both Pokemon, but in general, do you help them find like a coder or developer too?
I could. Pokemon company doesn't use me for that. Other companies do. I have a good friend who had a really cool idea reach out to me about a month and a half ago and ask me to help him find a co-founder CTO for his startup.
Interesting.
And I made a couple of recommendations and some intros, and I think that he's going to be good. Well, I mean, we'll see. It's still early, but yes, I mean, that's part of what I do.
So let's just say like at this point in the interview, people are like, well, how do we contact this guy though? What is shameless plug? Where do they get you? So they can be like, I need a CTO too.
Yeah. Best place to find me is on my website, lucasroot.com. It has all my contact information. Email, cell phone. I gotta warn you, I probably am not gonna pick up the call. I'm on calls all day, but you could text me, and email is probably the best way to get me.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, especially a guy like you, I'm assuming you usually keep your calls to a minimum on the weekend.
As much as I can, yes.
And then just Monday through Friday, what is almost 24 hours or at least 12 hours straight, just nonstop?
It's quite often 12 hours straight. If you love what you do, people say if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. That's complete bullshit. Pardon the language. Like,
it's all good.
There is a threshold at which even the things that you absolutely love become actual work, like actual work.
Mm-hmm.
But, 8 hours straight, 9 hours straight, if you love what you do, that's not hard.
Oh, it's not. No, I used to teach martial arts in my younger years out of high school. It's like, oh, I'm going to be a martial artist. I'm going to make my money. That I love teaching the kids. I didn't like the marketing, the planning, the scheduling, the billing, but I like teaching them.
I get it.
Kind of thing.
If the money is good, I mean, it's a gig market world out there. If the money is good, you can get really good marketers for not a lot out of pocket. I mean, they're getting paid well for their time, you know, 50, 60 bucks an hour, but you're paying, let's say, $1,000 a month for them to just manage all your marketing and make sure the phone keeps ringing for you. If the money is good, you can get outsourced bookkeeping. So all the bookkeeping gets done, all the client billing gets done, if the money is good, there's an opportunity to outsource all the stuff that you don't want to be doing. I love the gig economy. I really do.
I would say I've had nothing against the gig economy, but it's just one of those. This is also back when I'm like super entrenched in work and I'm like, I can only work this. If I get any extra money, like the IRS is just going to give me a nightmare kind of thing. Now I'm going to realize like the gig economy, call an accountant and be like, okay, I'm starting to do this. What should I do? Yeah. What should I start writing off kind of thing?
Yeah, it's great. It really is fantastic.
It is. Yeah. That's cool. So now I'm just asking as like a curious kid. Let's say I'm going to start a business right now and I'm paying you the whatever fee. How would I go about, I'm not making that much money. Let's say 500,000 tops. Let's say that's a good year. How would you help me strategize to start sending out gig workers, my fractional CEOs, CMOs and all that?
Start with the stuff that is most important to the business and that you want to, that you're most averse to doing.
Explain
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bookkeeping is a great example. It's not the only example. Maybe you like to do bookkeeping. In this case, I know that you don't because you already said so, but bookkeeping is a great example. I had an accounting client that I worked with, and I got him to outsource his bookkeeping.
That's cool. So wait, was it his personal or all his bookkeeping too?
His internal stuff too.
What?
Now he still does the bookkeeping for his clients, but I was like, your bookkeeping for your own business is not core to your business. It has to be done, but it's not core to your business. Outsource it. Focus your time, focus your energy on servicing your clients. Get this stuff done. It has to be done, but get it done by some, you know, by a vendor, an external person. It blew his mind and increased his profitability instantly.
Yeah, because you're running books all the time. You're just like, wait, am I running mine? Am I running my clients? I don't know.
Yeah.
If you can solely focus on your clients, then you can also slowly, not rudely, increment it up with future clients.
Yeah, exactly. By being focused on his clients and client service, he actually got better at his job and was able to charge more. It's exactly what you just said. Figure out what are the things that must be done to run the business. Absolutely must be done. Bookkeeping is a good example. It's not the only one. Figure out in order, which are the ones that you are most opposed to doing yourself.
Okay.
Those things, get them outsourced as quickly as possible.
Okay. Yeah. When your cash flow is enough that you personally may not be making money, but you can afford to pay them consistently. So that's when you just outsource it.
Yeah. It takes it out of your brain. So you're not spending thought time on it, right? Because even there's work time and there's thought time, and thought time spills over into the rest of your life. You don't stop thinking when you stop working, right? So you need to free your brain of these things that you don't like.
Yeah, that's true. Huh? So, okay, let's say it's just a simple moving company. We'll go with that. Should they hire like a virtual assistant in the Philippines to like handle their call center kind of thing or whatever? Or I'm trying to think now.
Now this is important. That's a great question, but the answer is nuanced here. This is really important. Sales calls are really, really important to a small business.
Right.
Those I would tell you are core to your success. So don't outsource them.
Okay. Do those for now in the beginning so you can set your roots and then delegate from there.
And manage your customers. Make sure that your customers are always happy. Make sure they end your call feeling great about the call that they just had. Customer service calls when you're a small business and growing. Look, nobody likes answering the phone to an irate customer. I can't believe you brought over my couch and it has two new scuffs and a rip and a broken leg. Like this, there's nothing fun about that call.
No,
but it's chief. Really important. Just like I talked about before with my real estate business, is really important to maintain a touch on the pulse of that, of those things, the places that you're losing money and your opportunity to make a customer experience go from negative to positive. Your outsourced people in the Philippines, they're smart, they're hardworking. They are never going to take a bad customer experience and turn it into a good one. It's never going to happen. Only you can do that.
Right.
So make sure that when you're outsourcing things, it's things that are not core to your business. Okay. Now, if it's a technology startup and the customer is calling in to ask questions about things, and you know that the answer is always going to be the same to that question, you can outsource that.
Or like a variable, like a funnel. Eventually, it all equals the same thing.
Yep.
Okay.
But if it has an impact on your sales, don't outsource that until you can afford to lose those customers.
Okay. I'm loving how you're presenting this to me because I'm like, I had a certain point was like, let's tell them. Oh no, I'm going to ask them real, really explicit questions. Ah, man, that's good. Cause I've been trying to figure that out. The whole reason I brought up the martial arts is at one point I was making good money and it was one of those, I guess I had a system in place But I took my eyes off the ball for just like one day and it all fell apart. And that's where I'm like, me looking back with hindsight, I'm like, how could I have fixed that kind of thing?
I get it. It's so easy to take your eye off the ball. Me personally, I won't start a business without partners. I am not a solopreneur. I know I'm not a solopreneur.
Okay.
I guarantee you I'm going to take my eye off the ball at some point. I have to have partners who are going to catch me when I fall, because I know I'm going to fall. I know I'm human. I know I'm going to mess up. And I need to have partners that are going to be right there with me every step of the way to make sure that when something goes wrong like that, they got me covered. Now, not everybody is a partner entrepreneur. I am. There are plenty of people who really do well as a solopreneur. If you're going to be a solopreneur, you have to have processes that are better and stronger than the mistakes that you're going to make.
That's really hard to pull off, though.
Yeah,
I'm going to say that's really hard to pull off in general, unless you're like a really logistically driven. No, very pattern
process.
Yeah, logic. Process. Mm-hmm. To slightly, you know, all your flaws and how they're going to tick and be like, okay, if this ticks, this happens. Wow, that is. Yeah, I can't do that because I don't even know half the problems I have.
Then I recommend having a partner. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be a rev share partner. It could be an employee that you treat like a partner.
Interesting. I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah.
So how do you go about finding your relationships for partners in business?
Typically, they're friends or family members.
I always heard friends and family, it gets a little tricky there.
It does. You look, every choice that you make is going to have problems. Every single choice that you make is going to have problems. So you just have to choose your problems.
Okay.
Friends and family are tricky. People you don't know are tricky.
That's true. Very true.
So then, choose your problems.
Yeah. And hopefully you have honorable friends and family because you can be like, wait, what's going on? And they tell you kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You'll find out.
One way or another,
you'll find out.
So then for the employee thing, would that be like, let's say I have a print shop, I print shirts kind of thing. This is just hypothetical.
Sure.
And I can run most of it on my own, but I can't really do the front end kind of thing, like the desk, the receiving the customers and getting them into the system. Mm-hmm. Let's just say I hire a mom, recently had a kid, 5 years old. She needs a job. Would I just be like one of those? I just say, hey, I can't do this. If you want to pick up this end, like go for it. And I'll even pay you a little extra kind of thing. And if you have any ideas, bounce it off me. Or is it more like a test? Like I put a certain obstacle in the way to see how they react and be like, ah, yes, they're partner material now kind of thing.
I like to let people grow into the role that they're going to be in.
Okay.
It doesn't always work. Some people won't grow into a role. Okay. I get that, you know, we'll find out along the way, but I like to let people grow into their role.
Okay.
So, I also am very upfront. I tell people what I expect of them and what I think they're capable of, and I push them towards their capacity. And sometimes that's uncomfortable.
For you or for the person?
Both.
Okay. I was like, wait, how he said it? Wait, is that for you or for them?
Yeah, both. It usually works out for me in my life, in my relationships. You know, I keep doing it.
Yeah. I'll say as long as it's not broken, keep going.
Yep.
Okay. Interesting. There's so many questions. I'm like trying to keep it straight. So then the fractional, let's just say it's like bootstrap at that point. Let's just say hypothetically, I'm barely pulling in 90K. Is that the point where I just bite it and keep going until I can guarantee whatever? Or is that when I kind of like keep outsourcing the fiber and just embrace the gig economy for it?
As soon as you can afford it, you should be considering outsourcing some things. And again, go in reverse order, go in the order of the things that must be done that you hate to do.
Got it.
soon as you can afford it. Because the more you offload those things that must be done and you hate doing, the more you'll be able to focus on what you personally are great at.
Okay.
And that's what's going to drive revenue. That's what's going to bring in more customers. That's what's going to make you an attractive business to work with, because you're focused on what you're great at. People love working with other people who are great.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you're a very strong, inspirational leader with a strong why. Sometimes people don't even know why. It's like, I just need to follow this guy kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, what's going to take somebody who's capable of being a strong, inspirational leader and turn them into a grouch is having them do something they hate doing all day.
Yeah. That is the quickest way to do it. I got a quick question. How long do I got you, actually?
Another 10 minutes.
Perfect. I figured as much. So then, actually, you know what? I want to wrap it up a little early.
Sure.
What is, I got three questions. Other than work, what have you been doing to keep yourself busy during these lockdown times?
I do a lot of reading, and okay. I play some computer games. I work for a gaming company after all.
You would say you better play their games.
Yeah. I try not, I'm an addictive personality, and I know I am. So I absolutely can get addicted to games and go down that rabbit hole. And at some point it will start damaging your life as it does with mine. So I keep that in mind. That's an example of having processes that are stronger than your mistakes. As I start to put more time into games, I have some things that pop up in my life. Like, hey, you know, you're spending too much time. You got to back off. And I can't.
Okay.
So I read a lot of books. I do some gaming. I have a pretty active local social life with, you know, a handful of really good friends that we meet up at least once a week, sometimes more often.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Is it just like get coffee, lunch kind of thing?
Sometimes. Yeah. And, you know, we'll go out and do, you know, boys things and you know, I live in Southern California, so the desert isn't far away, and we'll go just be crazy hooligans out where nobody's going to get hurt.
Yeah, I want to say, especially our desert, is the best place to do it.
Oh, it's great.
So someone aspiring to be like you, successful coach, like consultant, working for an awesome company, what are some tips, tricks, or advice you'd give them to start down your path?
Number one, figure out what you love. And find a way to turn what you love into something that's profitable.
Okay.
There are lots of ways for everything that you love, there are lots of ways to make money at it. You know, people who love being gamers, you can start up a YouTube channel or a Twitch channel and start talking to customers. YouTube will actually pay you if you have 10,000 or more subscribers. 10,000 subscribers is hard to get, but far from impossible.
Yeah. It's a time game at that point.
It's a time game and consistency, and you have to be at least decent at talking to your audience, and you have to have your own personality, and people will come to you because you have your own personality, not necessarily because you're smarter than the other person or you do things better than them. It's about personality. YouTube followers are following you because they need to be entertained.
Right. Like, yeah.
Remember that. They need to be entertained.
Yeah, I follow this guy on YouTube. His name's Gray Still Play. Terrible gamer. He's just funny. He even knows he's terrible, and he's like, "Oh man, here I go again," kind of thing.
Perfect example. So, figure out what you love. Find a way to make that profitable that you're okay with. Start to do that. Start to do the thing that will make the thing that you love profitable. Just start. All the problems that are going to have people get lost in analysis paralysis like crazy. All the problems are going to pop up. Just deal with them as they come. You can. Mm-hmm. You can. Now, there are some caveats to that. If what you want to do is sell clothes and you want to have a brick and mortar business with customers that walk in the front door, well, when you sign the lease for that new store, you're signing yourself up for some really serious money. So make sure you've got a community that's ready to support you.
Yeah.
Not just you live in town and there is a community in town. Like, Make sure you have a community that's ready to support you. People that are going to show up and buy from you because you're you. And this goes back to that personality. You got to bring yourself out. You got to make yourself visible. And you have to be you, because that's the only thing about you that's truly unique. No one else can be you.
That's true. I've never heard it in that light. Like, it's like the you are only you. And I'm like, it's like the, oh, that's philosophical. That's great. But like, there's a lot of people that can sound and similarly act to me kind of thing. So that's awesome. I already mentioned it earlier, but where's everything that people can contact you? Your website, social, email, all that.
Yeah. Best place to find me is either on Instagram. My Instagram profile is at Luke Root, LucRoot. Or on my website, lucasroot.com.
Awesome. I hope everyone sends you a message just to be like, hey, we saw you on the show kind of thing.
I would love that. Blow my messages up.
Yes. All right. Lucas, it's been an absolute honor and a pleasure just to even to sit here for an hour to pick your brain.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you. Well, congratulations. You made it to the end. You're an awesome person. Not many make it here. So, being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? App, if you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations, you're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel, change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome, and see you next time.